Welcome to the Mind Games podcast. Today, we're joined by a family friend of mine, someone who has done it all in rugby league. He's won comps, represented his state and country, and now is delving into the world of business. James Maloney, enjoy. All right, Jimmy Maloney, mate, welcome to the Mind Games podcast. How you doing?
Good, mate. How are you?
Very good, mate. Very good. Mate, just to get started, I really appreciate you, your time for this. Yeah, super great you helped me out. I know you're not as busy as you used to be, but you're still a busy man with all your businesses you got going on. So, yeah, I appreciate you taking time out to come help me out.
Nah, too easy, mate. We go back a long way.
Yeah.
So, it's good to come in and have a chat.
That's what I was going to get to. We've actually known each other. We've known each other for over probably nearly 25 years, really. So, for context, my old man and uncles used to coach you in footy when you were 16, 17 and playing a bit of Jim Beam Cup, which is now called Ron Massey Cup.
Yep.
I've got a couple of funny stories from those days from them. But I guess one story I'll probably want to tell, which kind of sums up your mindset and will actually filter in with a few other stories that we'll get to later in the show. But I vividly remember this as like an 8 or 9 year old. I was a ball boy. I was going to say I was running the tee for you, but you're actually a third string kicker. Behind Blake Labert and Jimmy Holt. And you was kind of sitting around, and as like an 8 or 9 year old, you kind of listen to everything that all these boys are sort of talking about. And Dave Saney was like captain of the rep team, one of the star juniors coming through and whatever. And he told a story and you kind of go to him, "Dave, when was that?" And he goes, "Oh, that was back when I was better than you." And you went, "When were you ever better than me?" And for context, you weren't even like, you were just a normal player at those stage, right?
Yeah, I was just playing on the coast. And Dave Saney, a good mate of mine, he'd played a few years at the Newcastle Knights, juniors and stuff like that. So, yeah, I don't remember all of them. I've had a few stories like that where someone said, I said, I would have listened. He tried to tell me to do something. I said, I'll listen to you when you're better than me. So I don't remember them all. It's a long time ago, but probably did happen.
Yeah, well, swinging back to that, you spent the year playing at Arimba again this year. How was that?
Yeah, mate, it was cool. Sort of after playing, I played it in the Nines Premier League. Good mate of mine runs that competition up on Gold Coast on Australia Day weekend, and I sort of started training for it and, you know, getting off the drink and just felt a bit healthy. And I never finished footy because there was anything wrong with my body. It was just purely mentally I was over it. And so I started toying with the idea of maybe having a run around, and went and caught up with Johnny Comans, actually. Great man who'd been involved with Arimba Football Club for probably 30 years, probably longer actually. He was there when I first started and mentioned it. And he said, "Mate, if you're going to throw the boots on, come back for one last year where it all started." And, yeah, it was really enjoyable. It was a tough year at times because they'd just gone back into first grade, so they hadn't had a first grade side for about 4 or 5 years, and a lot of the boys were playing their first year of first grade, so, you know, it's hard to come in and be successful straight away. But, we won 3 games throughout the year. We celebrated those 3 games very well. And we knocked off Wyong, who are obviously a massive club. And I think Arimba hadn't beat Wyong for like 10 years in first grade.
Yeah, so, wow.
Yeah, it was cool. It was very enjoyable. And, you know, lace up the boots for one last time, back where it all began, was, yeah, pretty cool.
Cool. So you done now?
Yeah, I think I'm done. So I'm doing some coaching, you know, helping out brothers at Penrith because I'm based out there this year. They were trying to get me to pull the boots on. I told them, "Listen, we're just talking coaching now. I'm 40 next year, so yeah."
Yeah, there you go. Well, it's funny you mentioned celebrating the win. So there's actually another funny story from those Arimba days. Do you remember the day you were down 34-0 at halftime in a Jim Beam Cup game and you walked in the sheds and Kyle White, rest in peace, Kyle White, but Kyle White walked in and said, "Jimmy, fuck me, do you want to be a footy star or a disco star?"
I ended up with the nickname Disco.
Yeah, is that why? Because of that?
Yeah, I can't remember that, but I was 17 at the start when I first turned, then turned 18, and Mate, it was local footy. I was just a kid, so we go out on Friday night and we'd go get on the drink. And but then back in the day, that was when you had they stamp on entry. So then you used to have to get there earlier and strap your wrists so the coach couldn't see the stamps, and he didn't know you'd been out on the drink. So yeah, good old days. But yeah, a lot of good times there, and a lot of funny memories. So. Had a few different nicknames along the way, but yeah, Disco was one of them. Yeah,
well, I suppose the next one was Sturlo, wasn't it?
Yeah, so the next one I got Sturlo down at Parramatta.
Before that, you went to North Sydney, right?
Yeah.
So you got picked up off at the end of that season because they folded in GMM Cup, I believe. And
so we just went down. That was my way to Sydney. So me and about four or five other mates, we just went down to North Sydney Bears open trials where anyone can just turn up and play. And went down there and pretty much all of us got picked up by Norse. That was our last year of 20s, which was Flegg or whatever at that time. And, went down and played at North Sydney, played the first half of the year in the 20s under Steve Carter was our coach, the old Panthers, 5'8". And then halfway through I got picked up to Premier League, which was obviously North's highest level because they didn't have a first grade side under Kyle's brother, Josh. And then from there, I remember Greg Florimo called me in one day and said, Jimmy, do you have a manager? I was like, mate, I was just a kid from the coast playing footy. So I was like, no, look, I don't. And he sort of said, you know, I suggest you look and find one, and managed to get put onto Wayne Beavis. Again, tragically passed away just recently, which was very, very sad. But, mate, he was awesome for me and got me a gig out at Parramatta, and that was my leeway into Sydney. You know, my first contract was $12,500.
Look at that!
Imagine that. I had free accommodation. We used to live, and I had a building background, so I was doing my carpentry apprenticeship. So I used to work 2.5 days at the stadium, just doing fix it stuff. And
what were you really doing there?
Hey, well, I was doing it, and then my first year, I did me. What's it called? My ankle. You know where they pin it now? The tightrope? What's the...
I
can't
doctor.
Even think of it at the moment.
I'm the kid from the coast too, mate. I'm not a doctor.
But done that. And then obviously I couldn't work. So, but with the medical and that we had, so I had lost income from, you know, from working and that. So I was getting paid more out of that than going to work. So I just kept getting the doctor to go, nah, you're not going back, mate. And then I lost my job because I never went back to work.
So is that last job you've had?
Not
including footy?
Not including footy, yeah. Oh, now I'm back in the workforce now. Not every day.
Not full time.
But trying to work out a few things so I don't have to work 9 to 5.
You're just a businessman now. we'll get to that. Then how'd you end up at Melbourne?
Yeah, from basically I had the 2 years at Parramatta. I played lower grades there. I was sort of probably did as much as I could to try and get a run, I think. Like I was on standby a couple of times for first grade, didn't quite get a run, and then got a call from Craig Bellamy. At the time, Melbourne were playing Greg Inglis at 5'8", because they didn't really have a known 5'8". So I had a conversation with Bellyache. He sort of said, look, there's obviously a position there. Nothing's guaranteed, but if you want to come down and fight for it. And basically had a conversation with my old man about that, who coincidentally he'd played with and against Bellyache. My old man was out at Orange Sims and Craig Bellamy played at Oberon. So he knew my old man and stuff. And my dad just said, he goes, mate, no one goes to Melbourne and leaves a worse footballer than what they got when they got there. So that was enough. So I went down, did that, and managed to debut. I think it was about round 5 that year.
Who did you debut against?
Penrith.
Did you?
Penrith,
that's such a – there's so many weird coincidences with your story. But anyway, with that, like how – did you have to do the workers – thing in the preseason?
I didn't. So a lot of the boys did, because basically the concept of that is so that guys understand, you know, kids that come straight out of school have never had a real job, you know, to understand a bit of perspective and that. Because I was doing my carpentry apprenticeship, I'd done two and a half years or whatever, working and doing stuff like that. So I didn't have to go through it, but I had to go through a couple of the army or one of the army camps, which, yeah, that was a tough couple of days.
Any funny stories from that?
Yeah, there's a couple. We had went to sleep on the second night. So the first, like, 3 days, two nights. The first night, you're probably lucky if you got 45 minutes sleep, and then the second night, they drop you all about 100 metres, separated 100 by 100 metres along this track, and you got to stand there and just watch guard, like, keep guard all night. And you're sort of standing there with your pack on that's heavy. You got this big, thick bar of Rio, which is meant to be your gun, and they say at one point we're going to sneak up on you, you know, and you got to go, halt, who goes there? So, well, everyone's sitting there and it's that sort of delusionally tired that everyone starts, like, you start thinking you're seeing people, and then you hear someone the other way go, oh, who goes there? And you're like, oh, shit, they're coming, where are they? And I was literally standing there with my pack, like, nearly falling over asleep, and I was just like, mate, fuck this, I'm fucking done. So I threw my pack in under this bush, and I went and hid under this bush and went to sleep. And then whatever, they come back and picked everyone up, and they haven't seen me. So they've gone and picked everyone up, gone back to the camp, and they put you in teams, give you a colour and a number. So we had to do like this sound check or sound off, whatever they call it. And I was blue four. So then they got to, you know, the guys were like blue one, blue two, blue three. And then there's this pause. And then Willie Chambers like blue five. They're like, where the fuck's blue four? So I woke up, they come back and found me. And they had like the torches on their head, and they're like, what do you think you're doing? I was like, oh, mate, fuck off. I'm done with this. And then we got back, and it was like the next morning, we were up, and it was like not even light yet. We had like the headlights of cars and that, and we're getting hammered doing these exercises, done about 1,000 of these shoulder press. They have a look at the shoulders on me. They just don't do anything. And I'm like this, just going, ah, can't do it. And he's like, mate, this is because of you. And I'm like, oh, no, I'm sorry. But, yeah, it was good fun.
How good. So how'd you find out about your debut?
Bellyache told me.
Did you say fuck off about time?
Yeah. Nah, mate, I was pretty stoked, obviously. It's a long time sort of coming, you know. It wasn't something that happened, but when he told me, he goes, you're going to do it. And mate, the one thing about Melbourne, and it's quite well documented how much they value milestone matches for players and that. So awesome. They flew mum and the family and all that down and stuff like that. So no, it was really cool. My old man had passed away at the start of the 2009 season.
Yep.
Who was probably my biggest influence on my career at, you know, bar none. And, you know, having the link with Bellyache, you know, Bellyache actually presented my debut jersey, which was pretty emotional and pretty cool, because, you know, I remember him getting up and he said, mate, I thought long and hard about who should present your jersey, and, you know, and he said, but, you know, knowing your dad and stuff like that. So that was really cool. And, yeah, sort of seems like, looking back now, it seems like forever ago. But
yeah.
Mate, it goes so fast.
Yeah, it's funny, like, I still remember when it all happened. I remember my old man coming, just excited as, oh, Jimmy's debuting this week. And I remember our whole family were just like, because we obviously, you're all of our favourite player from afar, because we all knew you well.
Yeah.
I still remember, like, you walked in one day and said to my little brother, far out, you look more like Ray than Ray does, which is the funniest thing ever. And that still, like, is just, you would never remember saying that. It's just something that sort of stuck with a few throwaway lines that sort of stuck with us. I know we had a few beers a little while ago, and I asked you a couple of these questions, but we were talking about when you were younger. You were talking about, we're doing a little bit of coaching now, and you're explaining how, like, you halves were calling a play, but they didn't know the intention of why they were calling the play. So whether it was to, like, create an overlap here or here, and you were asking them those questions, but they couldn't answer it. And that was kind of something that you knew from the moment I saw you play. You understood those types of things. And you explained to me that your old man was a massive piece in that, and explaining that and teaching you that from a young age. Can you give us a bit of insight on that?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think that's, you know, I was so lucky. Obviously, I've had a lot of coaches, you know, at NRL level that have taught me a lot, like a Craig Bellamy, Trent Robinson, Ivan Cleary, you know, guys like this that have been hugely successful in NRL. But, you know, especially in your younger years, you know, I was very fortunate that my old man, you know, was a very smart footballer, knew football well. So he played down at the Queanbeyan Blues under Don Ferner, who coached Australia and things like that. So I was very lucky, you know, to have that sort of knowledge of rugby league around me. And I think just watching footy now and how the game sort of changed and, you know, everyone's crying out for like where there's no, you know, the pool of halfbacks is getting smaller and smaller. And I think unfortunately it's because people aren't taught to think about the game anymore, you know. The way I sort of explain it easiest is like I've got four kids and that. So when your kids go and start playing football, the dad that coaches them is the dad who's got time, you know. I've never been able to sort of coach my kids. I didn't have weekends free and stuff like that. So, and it's through no knock on them, you know, but they don't necessarily know football as well as some other people do, but they do their best. And then I think you progress to that. And I think there's coaches that coach kids from 13 to 16 or whatever who watch NRL and they watch these big shapes and plays and go, we're going to do this and we're going to do that. And, you know, I go watch my eldest kids and that sometimes and junior footy and I see kids, you know, where there's a 20-metre blind side with one kid there and no one even thinks about playing it, you know. And to me, if I sort of go, if I had, you know, 3 6-year-old kids and I said to these three kids, and I said, we're going to play a game of football, you two versus you, and I'll give the winner $100. I said, what's the first thing that one kid's going to say? He's going, that's not fair. Why is it not fair? Because they've got two and I've got one. So instinctively, a six-year-old knows that, you know, a two-on-one, they've got an advantage. But there's so many people that, you know, that don't look at that. You know, I used to like, just amaze me that every year at NRL, a side that underperformed, you know, during pre-season, you'd see they'd come their first media commitments. And, you know, one of the questions was always like, you know, what have you worked on? What's going to be different this year? And dead set, nearly every one of them will go, oh, look, we want to play more eyes up footy. And I'm like, what do you play normally? like honestly, that's like, to me, that is so, like, that's just 101. Like, how do you play football without playing your eyes up and doing what you do? But it's, and I think, you know, the way rugby league's got to, you know, go playing to points and, you know, to play for one shot, it's developed a real one-shot mentality where we go there and we've got one play to try and beat the opposition. Whereas for years, everyone would talk about how players were 2-3 plays ahead, you know, because every time you get the ball, you've got 6 tackles.
Yeah.
You know, so you get kick the ball down here and you go, well, we're going to move you there, then we'll drag you over there, then we'll come back, punch you there. Hopefully you don't fill up there. If you don't, we'll do that. If you do and you're slow to fill up there, then we're going to go there. You know, and that's how, you know, I was sort of coached and taught about rugby league. And it's just, I just don't think the coaching levels are there and people aren't showing that. You know, I see guys even at the top level at NRL that still, you know, still learn, like even going into coaching and showing guys. You talk to guys about stuff that, and it's like they've never been, their eyes have been open to it. And to me, that, obviously, having that, you know, so much coaching knowledge early on, to me, that's just 101, you know.
For sure. Well, a question on that, and this is a question I actually genuinely want to understand. So, me, I'm a massive Ivan Cleary fan. Like, I think he's the greatest coach ever. He was your second NRL coach after Bellamy. You went to New Zealand. You then had him at the end of your career as well. Not outside of that, he's also debuted Sean Johnson. He's brought through Jerome Luai. He obviously coached yourself. He's fathered the greatest halfback that's ever lived. What do you think his way of coaching halves? Can you give us some insights into that? Is he great or is it?
Yeah, I think I always say I've one of his probably strengths is he understands that rugby league is not black and white.
Yeah,
and there's a whole lot of grey. He in when he guides you, but he gives confidence in to players to back their instincts, to understand that, to hold your nerve at different times, that you've got more time than what you think, you know, to remain calm, but also understand that players that play the game, like you, a lot of the time when you've played the game for so long, your instincts are right.
Mm.
You know, you've got the right instincts, and don't trust them, don't second guess, because a lot of guys get caught out when they start hesitating. Oh, do I do that? Do I not? And then they're sort of in no man's land. So I think he understands that very well.
That makes heaps of sense too, because if you think about the games that Nathan, there isn't many of them, but the games that Nathan hasn't dominated, he looks like he second guessed himself.
Yeah.
That makes heaps of sense. Do you think, like, you know how every time a sort of second string halfback comes to the club, so like a Sean O'Sullivan, Jack Cogger, like even Brad Schneider, when they have the best years of their career when they're playing behind Nathan, is that because they're watching Nathan and Jerome and stuff every year, or is it more the fact that Ivan's helping them out? Or?
I think they come into, obviously Penrith have got an amazing system that's been set up now, so they've coached through. They come into a system where they've got so many good players around them that all do their job, and sometimes when you step up levels or different things, it's easier. Like if you're a kid, it's easier to debut into a Penrith side now, like it was for me when I debuted at Melbourne, you know, than to come through in a Newcastle who are coming last, I think, because you don't have the calibre around you. Like when I debuted at Melbourne, I came in and there was no stress, no worry, I said, because I was catching the ball off Cameron Smith. I was passing to Cooper Cronk. I had GI outside me.
And Billy Slater
at the back. Like, how can I lose? Just do my job and, like, we're sweet. Like, and that, I think that's obviously when you come into a good system like Penrith have got now, that's how they'd feel. So you stop having to worry about anything else and you just go, just do my job. Everyone else will do theirs. Just do yours, you know, whereas sometimes you come in against a side that's lower and guys aren't doing their job, and then there's other things that come into play where you can't just worry about yourself. You're like, oh, well, he's not doing that where he should. That's a, so, yeah, I think coming through into a really good system, into a really good side, makes it easier in that.
Yeah, it makes heaps of sense. Yeah, cool. Love that. Then, you obviously, so from Melbourne went to the Warriors. I got a couple of questions here. So, like, initially... Like, how did you end up at the Warriors for starters? Is it opportunity or is it...
Yeah, well, I debuted round 5. I think I played round 6. And then Brett Finch had a fallout with Parramatta, who I'd sat behind for a couple of years at Parramatta. And then he, Melbourne, signed him. And then obviously went on to win the grand final in 09. So basically I was back stuck behind Cooper Cronk, Brett Finch as the number one. And I just needed regular first grade, and... my manager called me and said, mate, the Warriors are keen. I sort of said, keep looking. Because the only time I'd gone over to play reserve grade, and you basically go over there. A lot of the time the weather's shit.
Mm.
Like the stadium, Mount Smart, is actually down in like an industrial area.
Yeah, okay.
Even the other oval you used to play at was not flash, and you'd just come in and out. Didn't really know much about it, but... you know, I ended up going over there, and mate, it was the best thing for my career. It sort of a lot changed, because when I signed over there, my now wife fell pregnant with our first child. So I think that mindset, for so long I'd just been happy, you know, kicking around, playing footy.
Mm.
It was just me. I didn't have any responsibilities for, and then that was the moment where it sort of became, you know what? You've got responsibilities, you've got a kid on the way, you know, you got a family to provide for. It's either get over there, and if you go to Auckland and you end up sitting in reserve grade, out of sight, out of mind, you're probably done,
yeah.
You know. So that was, you know, I went over there, you knew that it was my position basically to lose. And went over, and obviously with that driving force of the responsibility of you either do this or you get back on the tools and go back to your carpentry apprenticeship. So, yeah, that's probably what changed for me.
Yeah, unreal. So with that, like, and probably like your first reaction probably sums that up. Like you're like, oh, keep looking. I don't want to go to New Zealand. But it's not only that, right? Like, so young kids, when they go to New Zealand, you've got to then get paid in a different currency. You've got to move to another country. I know it's similar, but you've got to move to another country. You've got to understand the culture a little bit. You've got to probably adapt and probably like evolve yourself in the culture a little bit.
Yeah.
Do you feel for New Zealand a little bit in terms of the Warriors, or do you find like, do you know, like, is it sometimes a good thing because they can get, the whole country gets behind you?
Yeah, I think so. Like, you know, when you go over there and the Warriors are doing well, you know, it's a one team country.
Yeah.
So everyone's on board, you know, it's such a good place to live, you know, like we really loved it. At one point we were looking at upgrading and extending, and we're going to buy a place, and we went looking at houses and stuff around there. You know, obviously there's some challenges with travel every second week and that, but you know, that's what it is, you know. Yep. It is what it is. And I think, you know, the pool of players they've got over there, the Warriors should be strong. And I think our game's in a good place when the Warriors are strong. I love my time there. You know, I think there's so much potential there. I think for me, going over with the family, obviously the Kiwis and even the Islanders, they're very family-based and family-orientated. So went over there as a kid having a young child, and that probably, you know, a lot of them have babies young and stuff like that. So it was probably a bit better that, you know, you weren't coming in on Monday and hearing about all the boys out on the drink and all that. Took away the temptation of, you know, I'm missing out on stuff and things like that. But, mate, they were so welcoming to me, and we loved our 3 years.
Yeah, cool. Did that tame down Disco a bit?
Yeah, well, I think it did. If you ask my missus, it probably took a bit longer. But it definitely did. Like, I probably, you know, I still made some fuck ups along the way, and still stayed out when I should have come home, and different things like that. But I think knowing, as I said, that was a big factor in knowing that I had responsibilities now for probably why I think my football then evolved, went to another level.
Yeah, cool. So you made the grand final your first year there, right?
Nah, 2010. No, we didn't, and then 2011 we did.
Yeah, cool. That was SJ's first year, right?
Yeah, so he'd only just come in back end. So Brett Seymour was in the halves with me there for pretty much most of the year. And I think Buster broke his thumb with about maybe 6 weeks to go. And then Shawnee came through just basically that last 6 weeks. And then obviously had that magical setup.
Yeah, yeah.
Which they said was a game winner, but we were already in front. So I'd got to try.
Yeah, you'd already got him there.
Look, that was cool. Obviously, Shawnee had been touted for a long time coming through.
Was he carving everyone up at training and stuff when he was young?
At 20s, yeah. And I think, I think Joey had tipped him as like a massive, a superstar coming through. But I think also then in the early time, Shawnee, he still had a lot to learn, you know. Like he had a lot of the pretty stuff and the flamboyant stuff, and then I think he probably needed to work on a bit of the game management, which definitely you saw his career evolve towards the back end, understanding his game management and, you know, toughness and stuff like that. So I think, you know, that developed along the way like it does for anyone. But yeah, he was, like some of the skills and attributes he had. Geez, it was nice to watch.
Crazy. So from there, you always come back to Australia? Was that always the plan, you think?
Yeah, as I said, so once we were looking to stay, and then we had our daughter, so we'd had our second child, our daughter, over in New Zealand. And then on that run to 2011, I was talking to the Warriors in the lead up. Then we started sort of going that run, and I said, look, I don't want to worry about contract stuff. We'll put it off to the end of the year. And after that run, then just had, you know, a heap of interest back home, and just with the kids and being back closer to family, it just sort of made sense to head back after that. So that's what we did. And I was actually, back then, I think I was like one of the first. I signed like 12 months out. Because I signed end of 2011. So, you know, before I even went back to play 2012 in New Zealand.
Was that a bit weird?
Yeah, well.
At the time?
Well, it was cool to know your future was set up and stuff like that. And you knew what was happening. But, yeah, it was sort of the first one. I remember back then it sort of caused a bit of a stir because it was like I had a whole year to play and I was already gone. But, yeah, I suppose it is what it is. I said, you know, the comfort in knowing, you know, that you've got – because that's rugby league, you know. You live in, what, 2-3 year blocks, 4 year if you're lucky, you know. But that's how players live. That's your security.
Absolutely.
A couple of years. So it's when you got responsibilities, you got families, it's comforting to know you've got a bit of security there.
Was it a bit because it was Trent Robinson's first year, right?
Yeah.
So was that a bit like, did you sign a contract with him?
No, I met with Brian Smith.
Yeah, okay.
When I signed the contract. And
well, did you, like, were you a bit uneasy when you heard new coaches coming in?
Nah, not at all. Like, it was funny. I basically was coming back. I was going to come back to either, I got down to either Souths or Roosters, obviously arch rivals.
Yeah.
And Madge was going to Souths. And Madge had been assistant down in Melbourne with me, and Madge was he called me heaps to try and get me to South. And honestly, the reason I didn't go is I knew how hard. Proper. I was like, mate, I'd go, yeah. He go, Jimmy, like, if we win, you win the first comp, you know, in forever, mate, you'll be awesome, blah, blah. But in the back of my head, I was like, mate, you're going to flog the fuck out of me for months. I was like, mate, I'm not in. And then there was talk about Brian Smith, like, was right into, like, con games and all that, and they were like, wasn't hard. So, in all honesty, that's sort of one of the reasons I went to the Roosters. And then Trent Robinson signed and we got flogged anyway. So it didn't really matter. But, yeah, mate, Roosters was awesome time. It's a lot of people ask me after going around to different clubs, and I think that's the most tight-knit club I've ever been involved in. And, yeah, we had a lot of success there as well, which was good. So, it worked out good.
Yeah, that's cool. Can you give me insight? So, like, obviously, first year at Roosters, super successful, but back end of the year, the Roosters normally go on a booze ban. They called a booze ban, and what was your reaction to that?
Yeah, well, there's a bit to it. So we had basically at the start of the year, we set down at the Roosters, we set down our, you know, rules around drinking. And what we basically had was we don't drink on short turnarounds, 7 days or longer. You're adults, you know, you make your choices.
And you're living in Bondi, like, fuck, please.
Yeah. And we, but also I had, for Ethan, so we had the two kids and that now. So basically we got to about 6 weeks out from the semis or whatever, and they had the leadership group, and Minnie and that jumps up and goes, boys, I think, you know, what do you say, we all just get off the drink, you know, we want to make a run at this, we want to have a real crack, you know, we don't want to have any excuses or whatever. What do you reckon? We all get off the drink, you know. Does anyone disagree? And I put my hand up. I was the only person who put my hand up. He goes, Jimmy, what? I said, mate. But this, my attitude was like, I had two kids. I didn't go out every weekend. I didn't do it. And I said, mate, if players want to get off the drink because they think that's best for the team, I support them 100%. I said, my mindset and my attitude is still going to be what's best for the team. My choices of whether I have a beer and that will still be based on what's the best thing for the team. I said, but if you're telling me that if I go to a mate's barbecue and I can't have a couple of beers because what we said, you know, this is what we've got to do. I said, no, get fucked. Like, that's not – and I'm also not someone who would go, yeah, sweet, let's get off it, and then go and have a couple of beers behind it.
Yeah.
Behind it. So I was just straight up and said that, and then, you know, they sort of went, oh, it's just for this. I said, 100%, I get it. If everyone's making decisions for the right reason, then it's still no problem. And, yeah, so I went and had a conversation with Trent Robinson about the same sort of thing. Mate, he understood, and they sort of said, mate, I understand where you're coming from, you know, just don't flirt, don't come in and go, oh, yeah, I was on the piss. I was like, which I wasn't going to do anyway. But, yeah, that was just more my mindset, and it was something along, you know, throughout my career, and I think if you look around, you know, clubs and different places that have had issues around players on the drink, I really believe if you treat players like kids, they'll act like kids, you know, and the more rules you try and bring in place, the more chance they've got to be broken. And there's definitely been clubs that have put themselves in, you know, put in a stupid rule about a curfew or something like that. Someone's broke it. Now they've got a problem that they didn't have to have because he hasn't really done anything wrong, you know, and now you've caused that sort of thing. So that was, yeah, just my sort.
There you go. That really brings in, like, the human factor of it, right? And at that stage, you were becoming a senior player and becoming one of the stars of the club, right? So there's actually a funny story I heard the other day, and it was about the Australian cricket team, and it was Andrew Symons, Brad Haddin and Adam Gilchrist went out on the piss, but they weren't allowed to. They were strictly no grog this week. Anyway, boys went out on the piss. John Buchanan was the coach, I believe it was, and they came back, and Andrew, and they were like, we'll sneak in like a back door and go to our rooms and get some sleep. Andrew Symons just walks in real loud and like starts like grabbing like cornflakes off John Buchanan's plate and stuff. Anyway, John Buchanan comes up to speak to Adam Gilchrist and goes, oh, mate, we got a problem. Gilchrist was a one-day captain. He goes, we've got a problem. Mate, Simo was blind last night when he went out and got on the drink, and we said we weren't allowed. And he goes, well, you've got a bigger problem now because me and Hads are with him, and if you drop us two, you don't have a keeper. And he goes, all right, we'll sweep that under the rug. So
that's good play. Yeah, if you're the wiggy,
that ties up footy, right? So, but that's like, it's really speaking to the, you know, treating people like humans, treating people like adults, and having that mutual respect to go, like, you know, if Jimmy wants to have a beer while he's cooking a barbecue, like, that's fine. Yeah. As long as he's not out on a bender.
And I think it comes back to your decision and why you're making the decision. Like, so long as your decisions around drinking and stuff is in the best interest of the team, which is, you know, how if you play a team sport and you're doing that, that's basically how it's always got to be. You know, it's got to be, you know, the team first, you know, and then I don't think there's any problems. And yeah, the same used to say all the time, how many other jobs, you know, when you finish work on Friday, because I used to always find it amusing too, clubs, if you were on an away trip and you'd had a bad loss or whatever, then the coaches would be like, mate, no one's drinking. But they can't say that if you go play at home, because everyone goes to their own houses. The only way they can do it is because you all stay at one hotel, so they can monitor when you come back. And I was like, mate, if you've had a bad day at work, whose boss goes, you know what, you don't drink this weekend.
Sit in your hotel room and look at the wall.
You've had a bad thing. So it was just always how I sort of looked at things.
Do you think that, like, and not being afraid to, like, standing up for yourself probably isn't the right word, but like standing up for what you think and having a voice for some of the maybe quieter guys on the team who had a similar opinion, do you think that's kind of what brought you a bit of success throughout your career? Like a few of the boys had you back in other ways because you had theirs?
Yeah, look, I think I was just, you know, I don't think I was ever, what I was trying to say was, you know, I wasn't deliberately trying to go against stuff, like, but I just sort of, if I had ideas or I had beliefs and that I thought were important, and I, you know, was willing to sort of stick up for them. It was funny, actually, the Roosters, like with that, because we had a few other things, and the first year I had sort of nominated myself as like king of the presidents. Like we were all the young boys and that. We had the leadership group who I used to think they were just a bit of like, they just yes men for Robbo.
But then you had the boys like Boyd and Pearce. Yeah, and shit.
But then, so then I'd be like, hey, mate, fuck you guys. You're all, we're leader of the peasants. We're for the young boys. And then the next year, 2017, they voted leadership group and everyone had to put in votes who they thought would be. And then Robbo goes, mate, they've voted in the leadership group. I said, mate, I don't want to be in it. Well, I said, they're all just puppets. They're all, yes, man, say, oh, we'll do this. And they all go, yes. And yeah, but then he was like, mate, but that's why we need you in, you know.
It'd be that link, you know, that link man between the two.
So, it was good, but we had, Trent Robinson was really, really good for me as well. Understood who I was. I remember one day he called me up. It was probably 2014, would have been start of 2014. So 2013, where it was just a dream sort of year. I played Origin. We won the comp and everything sort of, footy just started, you know, was going really well. And 2014, I was probably started wasn't playing badly, but it just wasn't happening like I wanted it to, you know. And I think he sort of could sense a little bit. And there was one day I was at home at my place in Maroubra, and Robbo called me and he said, "Mate, what are you doing?" I said, "Nah, nothing. I'm just about to have dinner." He goes, "Oh, do you want to, if I come past and pick you up, do you want to come and have a beer and watch the footy?" And I was like, "Yeah, righto." And then my missus was like, "Who was that?" I said, "It was Robbo." She goes, "What do you want?" I said, "He's going to come pick me up. We're going to have a beer and watch the footy." So he come pick me up, and we went down to one of the pubs in Maroubra, and that was when it was Monday night footies. It was a Monday night. He went down, just had a beer, watched the footy, didn't say much, just chilled, had a yarn, like general chit-chat.
Were you wigging out a bit? Like, what's he?
No, well, not really, but I was like, I don't sort of wig, but I was a bit like...
Yeah, we don't do this.
And then after I got back, and Mrs. was like, just goes, "What do you say?" I was like, "Nothing. We just had a couple of beers and watched the footy." But it sort of understood that was just his way of like checking in. He understood that, you know, me as a person, and
That's awesome.
It was just his way of checking in and just making sure I was all right, you know. So
because I suppose that's cool too, and got really good like lessons in leadership. Like he would do different things to different people, I'm assuming.
100%.
So like, to be fair, that team was pretty loose from what I know. But
you have, I think, for any coaches, like, and going into coaching, you know, when I came back and up the Cowboys, and the different things we understand good coaches is you coach a squad of 30 guys that are different personalities, different things. So you can't coach them all the same way.
Yeah.
You know, so I think the good coaches understand that, you know, that they build personal relationships and understand, you know, different players. And, you know, there might be one guy that, you know, you've got to show video to before the game. He wants to see a lot of video. There might be another guy who hates watching video, which was probably me when I played. He starts going to start looking at other. But, you know, and understanding everyone, you know, there might be someone you just need to walk over and have a chat to about something, and, you know, understanding what gets the best out. Because as a coach, that's your goal, is to get the best out of the player. So if you come in, you know, and spray a player that, you know, makes him sort of gun shy and makes him worse, and then you shouldn't be doing it, you know. If there's someone else that you need a good rocket and they become better, you know, then that works. So yeah,
it's great lessons for all aspects, like even in business and different things like management and business. And the more I'm sort of like learning, progressing my own way through sort of business, you're learning those lessons as well, which is really cool.
Well, it's built on even leadership. It's all built on relationships, and we used to say about even in football terms, you know, the good sides can have hard conversations and uncomfortable conversations. And the only reason, like if you think about your best mates, if your best mate did something wrong and you're playing, you just spray him straight away. What the fuck is that? You know, blah, blah, blah. How do you do that? Of course, your bond is so tight, you don't question that he'll take it the wrong way or something like that. So normally the reason that stopping a player having a hard conversation is because they question how strong their relationship is, and they think, he might take it the same way, the wrong way, and that comes back to building relationships. So.
Yeah, love that. Speaking of building relationships, you won a comp that year. Talk us through grand final day.
Grand final day. Well, I can't even remember the lead up to it. We used to, I think, because that year we used to go, even when we were playing at home, we'd go to like Crown Plaza Coogee from lunchtime.
They still do that.
Yeah, book in. I can't even remember why it did, whether it was away games, home games, whether it was just to keep a similar sort of build up. And
no, it's the home games, because they all get the bus to Allianz together. But that was
like, yeah, but that's away what, game, yeah. Whether that was about making like your home games when you're playing away and your home games all similar sort of preparation, right? I don't sort of know, but yeah, we used to do that, and then went out, mate. The game was
game of two halves, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, we started. What was the game? I don't even.
Usually,
I struggle to even remember. Like, I remember obviously the moment we were when Sammy Moa tipped Sonny.
Sonny, yeah.
And I find that so crazy when I think about it, because it was like, talk about like instincts and that. And when I pushed up off Sonny, it was like, I knew that was happening. Like I seen Sonny come around from Sammy and went, Sammy, tip me. And then I just sort of saw the whole, whoever was coming in, I was like, mate, he'll have to hit him low. Like Sonny's a big man. I think
it
was Justin
Horrell, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I was like, you'll have to hit him low because Sonny will pipe it out and he'll have it. So then I just lobbed off his half thing and I was like, mate, that's crazy that I literally knew
that. Bit of out-of-body experience kind of thing, like you sort of watch yourself do it.
Yeah, so. We're just sort of, this is going to happen and instincts have gone, bang, this is going to open up and to be there. And, yeah, mate, that was special. I remember, always remember afterwards going back to the Leagues Club and sitting there actually with Sonny and talking, and he was like, how does it feel? And we lost the comp with the Warriors in 2011. And I said, you know what it is? I said, mate, it's just contentment, because when you sort of lose a grand final, you sort of, it's the most lonely feeling. But then afterwards, you know, you sort of dust yourself off and you go, well, we've had a good year, you know, we've had a good year, made a grand final. But then you've constantly, then you go get on the beers and then you go, but what if? But what if? And there's all this. And then once you do it, it's just not a what if. So it's just, I was like, it's the goal that everyone sets out to do. And it's just like contentment, because you go, we did it. And there's no what ifs.
Love it. So and I guess it sort of flows a flow-on effect in terms of a question in terms of Penrith doing four. But like how is it, because that team was so stacked at the Roosters that year, that next year. How was it? Like so hard to go back to back. How'd you find going back to training the next year?
Yeah, I think you just, it's hard because for so long, I think the difference is if you, on your first year, throughout a year, you'll always have games where, you know, you probably didn't play that well, but you just find a way to win.
Mm.
And then when you're the premiers from the year before, every other side plays their best game, like gets up to play you. So then I think you sort of have, you might have another one of those games, but instead of winning, you lose. And then it just doesn't have the same feel, you know. You're not,
it's
just
a momentum
winning
thing.
Yeah,
it's
not
a confidence thing.
Yeah, yeah, just all that. Maybe not confidence changes, but it just, you find it a little bit harder because, as I said, every single game, whether you're playing the side coming last, they all get up to play you. So to be up week after week after week, and then, you know, yeah, to have, you know, you don't want to say it's complacency because you sort of, you know, it's such a good feeling, you sort of want to chase it again, but to have the same drive to do it and to get up and work hard. And I think, you know, from afar to see what Penrith have done, that's the most impressive thing, that, you know, Penrith, what they do, like there was nothing about Penrith that you look and just go, oh my God, that's phenomenal in terms of out there or doing. What they did was they did their job under pressure, under fatigue, time and time again. And they were the fittest side. They would just go for longer. They'd get in the grind, they'd kick you in the corners, they'd defend up, they'd get you on the ball, they'd play again. And they do it for longer than anyone could, and relentless in what they did. And you saw sides and they just run out of game better than anyone. And you can't, that can't be fluked.
No.
That level of fitness and, you know, more than anyone else.
Leadership, like, driving the
that's
standard.
That's only done through hard work.
Yeah. And that's led to turn. Well, from playing at Penrith, is that led from like Fish, Yowie, those type of guys?
Yeah, mate, Fish was a massive, you know, in terms of leadership. And even talking about before with the, obviously, time in New Zealand and stuff like that. So, obviously, with the Islander sort of community and Kiwis and all that, there's always, they have like a pecking order. There's always like a top dog, that they all sort of look to. And that, I remember when the first year I got to Penrith and we went up to Port Macquarie, I think it was, we're playing a game, Port or Coffs, or I think it was Port. We're up in Port and then it was pre-season, then we started getting on the drink. I went over and I was sitting with all the Islander boys. I said, righto, who's the big dog, you know? And then and Fish goes, you're looking at him. And I was laughing. But, mate, as a leader, mate, he was phenomenal.
Mate.
You know, and how of his work ethic. And I actually, I think, I don't know if it was his debut, but I remember I was at Cronulla and we were playing Penrith. And we were playing in one game. So I think Bryce Cartwright was back rower on my side. And I thought, you know, Bryce was in good form. He was hard to handle, offload, move. And I was like, righto, got Bryce, got to be on defensive, got to make sure we're good. And then he went off and I thought, oh, you beauty, sweet. Now I've just got this young kid or whatever. And it was Fish. And he just steamrolled at me for the next 40 minutes. And I was like, oh, fuck off. Bring Bryce back.
Yeah.
This is a pits. So, yeah, mate, he was phenomenal. I think, you know, to see a guy like Moses Leota, how he grows under him.
Mm.
You know, I think, you know, him signing at the Warriors, like how much,
they've improved,
not just what he'll do on the field himself, but how they bring. And you talk about, you know, he's like a Jared Warrior Hargraves, you know, when I was at the Roosters, you know, the real alpha middle that, you know, had a, like a Samoa come through and developed under him, Dylan Napa, Kane Evans, you know. It's not just what they do, Lindsay Collins or whatever, you know. All, you see all these front rowers that come through under them that they've sort of watched and they've aspired to, and they sort of, yeah, they just give them that real no-nonsense hard edge just by sort of bringing them through, which is awesome.
Love that. Love that. Yeah, cool. So we'll just swing it back a little bit. But going back, then you end up at Cronulla.
Yeah.
So what was leaving the Roosters?
Mate, I wanted to stay at the Roosters. There was a few issues salary cap-wise that sort of stopped it happening. So, yeah, I wanted to stay. I was very happy there. But yeah, just salary cap and a few things there. Couldn't stay. And then once I knew I couldn't stay, Cronulla was sort of where I wanted to go, you know, because they looked at that Cronulla side. They had awesome middles, especially very senior middles, that would lay a good platform. And then they had some exciting backs coming through. And I just sort of thought I could just jump in the middle of that in the halves and put it all together. And yeah, it worked out very well.
Absolutely. Great coach too, eh?
Hey.
Great coach.
Yeah. No,
that's
yeah.
funny.
No, it's
but anyway, won the comp again at Cronulla. Big night out after at Norleys. Talk us through the celebrations.
Yeah, mate, it was good. Obviously, the Shire went bonkers because there will always ever be, you know, their first one. And say all the time, it's quite special now looking back, because Cronulla can go win another 10 comps, but there'll only ever be one first. And, we ended up back at the club and obviously had a good time. And then we went to the next day and we ended up going down to Northies. And I remember I was talking with Damien Keogh and he goes, should we get the trophy down? I was like, fucking oath. We called Lyle and said, mate, you got 30 minutes to have that trophy down here. And we're walking through and then literally Northies just erupted and we're like, what's doing? And turn around and Gal's walking through with, you know, the trophy above his head. And then we, yeah, walked into this like area that we were sort of fenced off. The whole sort of crowd went and I was like, I'm going to go crowd surf on these lads. And yeah, so I think the runner was like go off a chair onto a table and then like launch in and – yeah, dropped my phone somewhere along the line through there. And but, yeah, great times. And, you know, the Shire, hey, went bonkers. It was a good place to be for a week.
Yeah, love it. How good. We actually we had Chad Townsend through a little bit ago and we'll ask him a few questions. And he was sort of saying he hasn't even watched the game back because he wanted to put himself through that last little bit where, like, the right-hand side was all defending over on the left and chasing over and doesn't want to put himself through it. Do you watch many games back?
I have never watched either of the premiership winning games back.
Can I ask why? I didn't know it was a thing until I asked Chad, and then now I've spoken to a few people.
I don't think it's a thing, and I don't think it's something that I've deliberately tried not to. Never watched the one I lost back. like, obviously, because it's a big thing at the time, the next day, like, it's they show replays and at the pub and that. You see bits and pieces, but you're on the drink and sort of not focusing too much on it. But I've never actually stood down and watched any of them. Never watched the Warriors one where we lost. And I've never watched. That's why even when you were saying about the Roosters, when
I remember it.
Think of the game, and like, mate, I honestly don't really remember. But yeah, it's not something. Yeah, just something I probably will at some point, whether it's with the kids or something like that. It's not a conscious decision of I'm not going to watch it back, because I think it would be cool to watch it back. But I just never have.
Do you think it's something to do with like how much video you've like made to do during the year? Like, so you're watching so many bits and pieces of different games during the year that one game that they sort of give you off, you're like, oh, happy days, I don't need to watch this.
I was never big on video, and
you're forced to watch a fair bit though still, aren't you?
Yeah, I think, like we're talking about, sometimes I think that the right good coaches are, you know, understand of trying to not overload, you know, trying to get the message through without overloading players. Some players love it, you know. There's players that will watch every game of footy, you know. Back when, even when I was playing, and maybe it's a bit because it's work,
yeah,
you know. But I remember when I was playing Friday night, it was always like Friday night footy, and then some of the other channels would have like a movie, and I was like, if it was a good movie, I'd watch the movie.
so good.
And funny, because I even say, like, you do your video through the week, and I don't know who else is like this, but I used to always say, when I was running out the tunnel to run onto the field each week, if someone stopped me and said, what did you watch in video this week? I couldn't have told them. I wouldn't have had a clue.
Because
I'd just go out and my game didn't change. Like, I knew week to week my game didn't change. There'd be certain things that I would look at. You know, if I was playing against a side, I'd just want to know a couple of their four-man's movements that I was playing against and different things. But that was it. Then I was just going out to play footy, and I'd done it since I was this high. So
the instincts take over, we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, just play on your instincts, you know, do whatever. And then you get in, if it wasn't going that well at halftime, they go, what did we say all week? And fuck, I don't know. I don't remember what are we talking about. No, but, that's just how I was. So, yeah.
Yeah, awesome. And then I guess off the back of that, full circle moment, and you wouldn't even know this, but for our family, because my old man played at Penrith, he obviously coached you. You're all our favourite player growing up. And then you end your career at Penrith. So it was a really cool one. I remember we went to a couple of games. Like, we went to Kate Ellis's debut, and we saw you there at over at Penrith Leagues Club. Yeah. Had a few beers after and different things. But, full circle, going back, you play at Penrith. When you debuted there, like, were you thinking, like, these young kids coming through are going to be what they became? Or were you just like, here to see a few kids debut and come through? Or what brought you to Penrith?
Yeah, look, obviously Gus had a bit to do with it. It was sort of Cronulla. Again, I was sort of trying to stay at Cronulla. That didn't happen. So then, you know, we started putting some feelers out. Gus was keen to sort of get me over there. And, a lot of people asked me, could I see it coming, these kids? To try and say you could see them winning four in a row or five in the either, like, you'd be lying. But I knew there was a good side there. I remember, and there's texts through me phone and different stuff after games on that first year with Hook and Ciro and that there. And we started well, and we were sort of up near the top at one point, I think, for, you know, a bit of the season. And we had some few games where I was like, mate, there's a team here. Like, there's some good kids. And it didn't quite sort of happen. When we were there, we came close that first year, you know, and then I think we finished fourth or something, and then they got rid of Hook in that first one, and Ciro took over, and I think we got second week of semis or something like that. We got beat. Actually, that was a game we shouldn't have got beat. I think the Cowboys knocked us off. But we were in front, and then I think Val, was it Cowboys or Sharks?
No, it wasn't.
And Val did a short kickoff and got the ball back or something. Val must have been, was he?
Yeah, English Sharks.
Yeah, he might have still been at the Sharks.
English Sharks.
And I think he like did us with a short kickoff for himself, like just caught guys getting, and then they come down and something happened there. But probably shouldn't have lost that one. Should have kept going. But yeah, and then the second year, mate, it was a tough year. That was the first year Ivan come.
Yeah,
we lost seven in a row at the start, which was crazy. I remember one session actually coming off the field. Ivan was like, and I was so like forever, I've been a horrible loser, you know. Always love winning, highly competitive. And I remember Ivan just goes, "How are you holding up?" And I was like, "Fuck!" I just broke down. I said, "Mate, I'm fucked. I can't deal with this." Like, "What do you mean?" And he said, "It, mate, what happens to everyone?" I said, "No, it doesn't. Not to me, it doesn't."
Like, yeah, this is Jimmy wins.
And it was the hard thing was, it was like, yeah, these young kids. So there was a lot of kids that were making debuts, or you know, we were struggling, or whether I can't even remember where we had injuries, or these kids make debuts. And the sort of hard bit is they come in, you know, there might be kids that at the start of the year their goal was to play first grade, you know. So if they make their debut and play in first grade, they're going, "How good's this?" But it's sort of, and then you'd see them after the thing, you know, and I understand guys handle things differently, but you know, you come in after losing and there'd be fucking guys like smiling or laughing. I was like, "Are you fucking serious?" Like, mate, like, and that used to fucking really hurt me, like, and fucking just really ick me that doing stuff. And I remember after that, Ciro and I, we went down to Penrith Golf Club, had a couple of beers and just to check in, because I was rattled, mate. I was so rattled.
So yeah. What turned that around that year? Because you came good towards the end of the year.
We came back and then we sort of dropped off again and just missed semis. But, yeah, I don't know. It's one of those things too, because, you know, you talk about the footy season, highs and lows, and the, like we said, winning becomes contagious. You know, if you're winning games, you'll get sides where you, you know, you might not be playing well, but you get in, you know, where the game could go either way and you just find a way to win.
Yeah.
And when you're losing, sometimes you get to that point and games you should win, you just find a way to lose them.
What are you, like, I heard Nathan is describing this the other day, because momentum's not a real thing. Like, it is a thing. Like, I understand it is real, but it's just something that goes on in your head.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, it's not actually something that is any different. You don't gain superpowers and gain 20 kilos and run faster. It's just a made up thing in your head, but it's the most powerful thing in the world. Like,
And it's like, obviously it's to do with confidence and different things, I suppose. Like, the thing is, each week and how your sort of season goes along, so you work real hard or whatever through the week to get this high, you know, this high that at the end of the week after a win, you know, and you go, "Oh, I get this high," and then you go back and you work. Maybe the next week you get this low. "Oh, shit, we don't get it." So you go work harder and you get this high again. But when you're on one of those runs, you just sort of work, you go down. Then you, like, work hard again, go down again. Work hard again, down. And then you're like, it's like almost like the harder you try and the more you try and force, and you're like, "Righto, this is the week." You sort of pump yourself right up, you go down again. Like, it's, I don't really know why it happens, but I just know 100% that's how it works, you know. It's contagious, you know, when you lose and you find ways to lose. When you win and you find ways to win. So we turned it around and we went on a run, and then I think we faded off us again and just sort of missed the semis. But, that was definitely tough.
Yeah, cool. And you obviously loved it at Penrith, because you're still living out there now, right?
Yeah, we did. Probably surprised us. I remember calling Jess and going, "I think we're going out to Penrith," and she was like, "Penrith?" But wait, when we went out there, like, we love it. I think, you know, we're in Glenmore Park there. It gives the kids have got a bit of freedom around there. It's a very family based area, and kids get on their push bikes and go ride around at mates' houses and do that. And that's what our sort of childhood was. I think that's important for kids, you know. And I think, unfortunately, it's getting fewer and fewer spots around a place like Sydney where you can do that. So that's sort of why we headed back out there.
Yeah, cool. I quickly just want to touch on your rep career.
Yeah.
So is it 2013 you played your first game?
Yep.
2013 for the Blues. Talk us through that. Talk about through finding out, Talk us through what you spent the coin on.
Yeah, that was the first year I got told, that was when they used to announce it. So there was talk that I'd get picked. I remember the final game before the announcement, Robbo told me afterwards he knew that I was definitely in. But then basically they used to announce it on TV or radio or whatever. And I remember I was at Maroubra taking the dog down the park, and then my phone just started pinging, going nuts. And then I was like, oh, they must have announced it. Into camp with Loz. I still remember we got beat in the game three in the decider by 2 points. Obviously there was a fair Queensland side at that time, but we won the first game. Had a really good game, the first one down in Sydney. We were probably dominant for most of the game, played on the front foot, and I remember going, far out, this Origin isn't as...
Was it you and Junior in the half?
Yeah, me and Piercy, and probably got a rude shock game too, you know, because like everything, you know, as a half playing on the front foot, things are easy, and then probably went up to Suncorp and spent a lot of the game on the back foot, and that probably hit me in the face a little bit of, oh, wow, this is what it's about. And then I remember, just getting done by 2 points. I remember I think Thurston scored that try where he went out to the left, and then we basically shut it down, and he stepped back a couple of times and just had a couple of guys stop and sort of, come over. And, that hurt. And Origin was a big thing for me, is I never wanted to be a guy who just played Origin. I wanted to be dominate. Successful.
Yeah.
At it. I told a story before. There was, I think when I was leaving, Cronulla? It must have been when I was at Cronulla and talked about it. I actually had a meeting with Warrington, a guy at Warrington, and Warrington offered me a big 4-year deal or something to go over there on really good money. And I remember talking to my manager and he said, mate, it's big money and that, like, you know, and I said, mate, I don't think I can go, because I hadn't. We'd lost 2013, then 16, 17. We'd lost those three series, and I said, mate, that was something that just icked at me. And I said, mate, I don't think I can go. Like, I think I'll have too many regrets. And you know, my manager was like, what if you don't get picked? What if, and I said, well, if I don't get picked, I don't get picked, but I don't have any what ifs.
Yeah.
You know, like we said before about, you know, or you know, grand finals and that, you know, you don't want to have what ifs. And you know, it turned out, signed at Penrith, got picked in 18, we won the series. 19, we said, was a tough year.
No, let's talk about 19. So game one, you don't get picked.
Oh,
was that the Suncorp game? We got beat. I think Cody was picked at 5-8. Cody then gets dropped for game two. You get picked for game two. Walk into camp. What do you tell Freddie?
I said, did you lose my number, mate? it was one of, like, I understood. The funny thing was, we'd won in 18. Obviously, Nathan debuted in 18.
Yeah.
I love the fact, I'm very proud of the fact that I was playing there and then could take pressure off Nathan coming into that arena for the first time. Very good mates with Mitchell Pearce, who I'd obviously seen get absolutely brought through the ringer around Origin, and understood that that's what goes with State of Origin, that halves, you know, when it's good, you take the credit. When it's bad, you take the blame. That's part and parcel of it. I feel like I can deal with that quite well. It was sort of something, you know, 18, to be able to just sort of let Nath go, mate, you just do you. I'll look after this. I'll run everything. You just do you. Always get used to it. And my biggest concern in 19, I understood why I didn't get picked, but I also knew what I brought to the team and what I did for the team. And, my biggest concern was that Cody, they were picking him on debut. Mm. Not that a knock on Cody as a player at all, but I just knew as a guy on debut, you'd just be looking at, look after myself, do my sort of job, you know, and yeah, a few things, and I just, yeah, that was my biggest thing. That then obviously they'd be Nath and that would be put under the pump and about, you know, that. So
well, it also ended up being a really cool series because game two you got Pick with Nath and Nath was injured for game three and you got to play game three and win the decider Piercy. With Piercy. So
yeah, on the bell. So yeah, that was cool. And you know, we came back and I think that was sort of my understanding, like to walk into the thing and just sort of say to Freddie, it was more
break the ice.
Yeah, you don't want it to be this weird thing. Like I understood the decision. Like we lost, like we said, we lost seven straight in the row. It's a big call. They were always going to pick Nath because they just blooded him and he was going to be long term.
Yeah.
So I understood why. But yeah, I just didn't want it to be that. You know, and I didn't hold any hard feelings. You know, so it was just a way to sort of break the ice. And you know, even then, probably one of the biggest compliments I heard, you know, like Greg Alexander say when I was sort of leaving, basically talk about that, and he said, "Mate, I've never seen the way, you know, the camp just changed when Jimmy walked in." And you know, walked in and said basically, "Let's go, I'll do the job, knew what I did," and we went and had success. And you know, that was cool to hear from a guy like Greg Alexander, who I really respect his opinion. That was a pretty big rap. So
unreal. And that also ties back to what we were talking about earlier around like the nuance around personalities and treating people like people. And you're not just a football player, you're actually like, there's different personalities, there's different things people bring to the group. It's not just what you're doing in the day-to-day on the field.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, cool. Mate, awesome. And then you obviously head off overseas. How was your time abroad?
Mate, unreal. Like we, at one point I was like, I could never come back. we loved it. Even we just went back
recently
for a month to catch up with friends and that over there. I absolutely loved our time in France. Yeah, it's a beautiful part of the world. No doubt at some point the goal is to buy a little apartment or something over there so we can go back and forth.
So you just rented while you were there?
And we went, just rented. We'll probably buy, you know, property prices over there are a lot cheaper than they are here.
Okay.
So we might be able to just buy a little apartment that, you know, even at the kids, mate, the kids speak French.
That's
now.
Awesome.
And, you know, those sort of opportunities to travel, show the kids the world, for them to learn a second language just by being able to kick a footy around. Like that's, you know, when it all starts out, you know, if someone goes, look, you could do this, this and this, and you can take your family, you can travel all by doing that, like it's awesome. So that's probably one of the things I'm most proud about, you know, what the opportunity I've been able to give the kids, you know, because footy's a game at the end of the day. It's a game you played, you know, since you're this high, regardless what level you play it because you love it and enjoy it. But yeah, to look back and be able to give the kids all those opportunities, I think that's probably the coolest thing.
That's awesome. Love that. That's cool. Now life after footy. You're a big businessman now. So let's talk about that. So like obviously you do your podcast, the Rugby League Journeyman. That's growing, continue to grow. I know that you told me when you were initially starting that you had a few mates ringing you saying, oh, let's do a podcast. You're like, that's lame as, I'm not doing that. But then got talked into it. How's that going?
Yeah, mate, it's going good. I think, you know, it's growing. It's good fun. Every once a week we go in and get to see Latsy, a very good mate of mine, professor, and that we have a laugh, and you know, it puts a smile on my face once a week, and you know, try and, you know, talk a little bit of footy sometimes when there's things to talk about, or give a, you know, serious opinion, but also have a laugh and give a bit of fun to it. So yeah, that's good, mate. It's a mix, and then got a few other things that I'm trying to get going. I've sort of realised I don't want to get a 9-to-5.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think I probably should, but I need, yeah, look, it's something. Well, I just think now at the point I am, I think it's a 9-to-5, you're never going to get ahead. Mm. So I think it's about, you know, try and have a crack at a few things and see how they work out. If they work out, they work out. If they don't, they don't.
But yeah, cool. How's Strider? So Strider's your beer company? I bought
into Strider Brewery. So, it's a hard market to sort of crack into. Obviously, you know, it's very dominated by CUB and SA or whatever.
Yeah. Do you do much work within it?
Doing a little bit. So I'm going down to Wagga tomorrow because we bought the Thirsty Crow Brewery down in Wagga.
Okay.
So I'll be down there doing an appearance. Anyone in Wagga?
Well, this comes out Sunday, so maybe not.
Damn.
But, we would have seen you yesterday.
Down there and that's going good and... Yeah, just keep plugging away, trying to get it. Nick Kyrgios is in the beer, obviously a very, very high profile person as well. So,
what's he like to have a beer with?
Mate, I haven't actually crossed paths with him yet. So that's
really
something. Yeah, not yet. Obviously, he was overseas, I think, in the US for a fair bit. It's just been hard to sort of, combine schedules. Looking forward to it. I reckon we'd get on.
Absolutely. So is it mainly just promotional work you're doing with it, or is it
trying to open doors, obviously, to try and get on taps and different venues. Obviously, again, comes back to, you know, people, you know, being able to do you a favour or give it a crack or give it a run. So, if anyone's out there, go find it. It's a great beer.
Love it. I'll get a case on the way home the weekend. I think one question I've probably always wanted to ask but never have, what's like, obviously you did a little bit on the, like on the Footy Show and stuff earlier in your life, like you had a few viral moments that went off and I think they're still trying to pop up a little bit. Have you thought about going back into doing proper media?
I would. I've had a couple of things. I do a lot of, I've been doing a lot of, especially this year, sportsman's lunches and speaking gigs and stuff like that. Really enjoy that. I think that's something... You know, I really like to explore. I think even going into talk to businesses, probably an area around when we talk about leadership and teamwork and that. I remember talking to Damien Keogh, who was obviously, he was a chairman at Cronulla, and when we were over at the World Club Challenge, we sat down and had lunch one time and he probably opened my eyes to it and said, there's so many attributes you guys have as high-performing team environment people that, you know, there's businesses that are actually starting to find it's easier to find or hire someone with those skills and teach them the actual black and white of what the role entails
100%
than it is to have someone that can do the black and white of what the job, but to try and teach them those skills.
Mate, couldn't agree more. Yeah. Literally, most of the stuff that I'm doing and learning in my corporate job now is literally stuff that I learned when I was a kid playing junior sport and growing up and learning and playing like in rep teams and stuff like that is literally stuff that's I'm like I link everything back now which is a crazy thing, like, and that's what kind of inspired this.
I think that's cool to you know, to go into and obviously, you know, go and work with different companies or, you know, talk to them about, you know, how you get the best of being in a lot of successful teams across, you know, a lot of different things. So I think I'm pretty good at, you know, that was always a strength of mine coming into a new environment, even fitting in, bringing guys together. So,
love it. Love it. Unreal. Mate, really appreciate this. I've got three quick questions for you.
Yeah, sweet.
16-year-old Jimmy walks through the door. What are you telling him? It was about when I met him too, so I'm interested to hear this.
You know what? I'd probably just say stick at it, man.
You wouldn't buy Bitcoin?
Oh, yeah. Probably do that. Invest in something to make you more money. Or maybe say you should have taken up soccer, mate. Yeah. Ready for the body. I don't have any. I've always sort of said don't live with regrets. Don't regret anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I had me life over again, I'd probably do it all the same. So, yeah, I'd just say, mate. Good things are coming.
That's awesome. What's your go-to cheat meal?
Oh, go-to cheat meal. Tell you what, I do love Chinese or something. Especially hungover, dirty Chinese.
good one at Glenmore Park?
Probably one that sat out all day in the buffet with MSG all
through. Oh, how good. Yum. Mate, do you play any golf?
I do. Not as much as I'd like to at the moment, but I want to get back into it.
Yeah,
but
sweet. Well, you're dead or alive, your dream golf foursome. So, can be anyone. You can pick
to
the golf.
To go play around.
Go spend 4 hours with. I'm carrying the bags. So he can't pick me either.
Righto. I'd grab John Daly.
Yeah.
Because we'd be playing best ball too, so he'd throw us down some good.
It doesn't have to be golfers, by the way. It can be anyone. Just thinking,
so we do. I'd Pink. I'm a big Pink fan.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, big Pink fan. I reckon she'd be cool.
Can you explain that?
Nah, just she's me all pass.
Yeah, okay.
I said, and I reckon, yeah, big fan of her. I think she's a good person.
That's so good.
And I've got two more. And then I'll probably oh, yeah, because I'm one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Then you can I'll have probably, a, you can have a caddy, though.
Nah, then I'll probably go like a Denzel Washington.
Unreal.
Yeah, I reckon he'd be quite, like, witty and, like, in good a wealth of knowledge. I think he'd be, you know, learn about. And he's got mad movies, so.
Love it. Yeah. I reckon they'd open some business doors for you too.
Yeah, surely. Yeah.
Unreal. Mate, Jimmy, I really appreciate this. I really appreciate your help on this as well. And, mate, good luck with the business in the future.
Too easy, mate. Cheers. Pleasure.